Your package says delivered, but delivered where exactly? The hallway? The lobby? Your neighbor's apartment? Instead of playing detective with your deliveries, get a mailbox at the UPS store. We'll sign for your packages, text you when they arrive, and keep your deliveries low-key under lock and key. Get 3 months free mailbox services with a new annual agreement at the UPS store. For full details and to get your coupon, visit the upsstore.com/offer.
Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees. I just made a Manny Machado, Alex Bregman bet. All the Twitchers get me betting against Houston athletes. Great. Anyways, hey,
before we go to the mailbag, though, I did want to comment on Brantley possibly being the guy. I think the one reason why I think he could is because, just like mound visits, we can value his locker room speeches in the playoffs. But the main thing is there were other options you could have spent money on in left field and a corner outfield position. And the fact that you chose to take it on a Brantley coming back off of surgery at his age is why I think there are people out there that will scrutinize that if he's not healthy and he's not performing like we were used to seeing Uncle Mike.
You know who I wanted? I wanted Masataka Yoshida.
That's right.
Let's be watching him closely this year. All right, get your questions in to our Mailbag Monday. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRNP listener line for our first Mailbag Monday question. Pena, what you got for the Killer Bees?
I got two questions for y'all. What is a better combination other than peanut butter and chocolate? And who do you got for this Saturday's fight, Johnny Bone Jones or Ciryl Gane? Thank you. Have a great week.
I think Johnny Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. I hate that it's taken him this long to get to heavyweight. That concerns me. Maybe a little bit of rust, maybe fighting with the extra pounds. We don't get the same John Jones that we're accustomed to seeing. John Jones, I think, is the greatest UFC fighter ever. He is my favorite UFC fighter ever. I'll be rooting for him, but I'm curious about the adjustment of moving up a weight class.
Me too.
As far as the peanut butter and chocolate,
Anderson,
I'm not
sure. Silva's better, for the record.
What? No way!
I'm Team Anderson Silva.
No way!
I like John Jones, but like he's one of the best of all time, but Anderson Silva, to me, is better. He's the greatest of all time, I think. He's also not a cheater.
Yeah, they're all cheating a little bit. Didn't Anderson Silva get busted, I thought, like, late in his career? He did.
Probably.
He did late in his career. I think after the broken leg. He did. I'm pretty sure he did.
Oh, that leg break is one of the nastiest moments in UFC.
Let's be honest. Dana White cares as much about performance-enhancing drugs in his sport as Bud Selig did about performance-enhancing drugs in his sport.
Fair.
They don't care. I don't really want to give my peanut butter and chocolate take because I'm going to get crushed.
Oh, I want to hear it.
I think both are slightly overrated.
Oh.
I don't dislike peanut butter. I'll eat a PB&J. I'll dip my apples into some peanut butter.
Yes.
I'm okay with that. I'm fine with some chocolate. I like a good Kit Kat. What's the Ferrero Rocher? Like a good Ferrero Rocher?
What the hell's that?
The little ball with the nuts.
Oh.
It's got like the little
gold
brown bag with the gold wrapper.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I love
those. Are elite.
They're so good.
They are elite.
They are fantastic.
Wow.
I'm just not
a sweet tooth like that.
Oh, see, it's all.
They're Ferrero Rocher.
I could have never told.
Rocher, whatever they're called. They're so good. But anyways.
I'm going to turn your mic off again.
Thank you.
I never crave peanut butter and chocolate. Kind of like pizza. I never crave pizza. I know that's weird. I know it's bizarre. I'm a very weird person. But it's the fact that I don't lie to you, the Hive.
Based on what we've set as a standard on this show for weird food takes, you're still fine.
That's true.
I was going to say that peanut butter chocolate's good. Peanut butter jelly is about equal to me because a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich, when you crave it, is right there. Maybe like ketchup on fries to me is a good combo that I really love. Like that, because I'm like with you. I don't know that I sit there and crave Reese's peanut butter cups, but I think it's one of the best candies ever made.
Yeah,
but I'll crave a peanut butter jelly from time to time.
Yeah, I just don't crave them as much. And I, as a kid, I really didn't like peanut butter a whole lot. I've grown to like it a little bit more though. 713-780-3776. What are your questions for the Killer Bees? Our Mailbag Monday. 713-780-3776. Ocho, despite winning comfortably against East Carolina, does it concern you that U of H missed a bunch of open threes? No, it doesn't. Cougars has some good three-point shooters. Sasser, very good three-point shooter. Tremont Mark, good three-point shooter. When a lot of people didn't expect him to be a good three-point shooter. Emmanuel Sharpe can be streaky at times, but I think he's like top seven in the American Conference in three-point shooting percentage.
Three-point shooter,
Jairus Walker for the size. He can be a little streaky at times too, but for his size, I mean, He was close to 40% a couple of games ago. So, no, I'm not really concerned. I mean, you know, they're getting good looks. Do you see East Carolina only made three shots in the first half of that game?
I did not.
They made three shots, three field goals in the first half of that game.
Was all that off the line?
They scored. Yeah, they went to the free throw line like 12 times, but they didn't score much in the first half. I think it was like 18 points, maybe. I can't remember. Yeah, but they only made three field goals in the first half.
Okay. Well, look, I think that the one thing that you have to keep in mind, Oach, if you're going to go that route, is defense travels. Whether they're making their shots or not, their suffocating defense can strangle the life out of just about any team in any environment, in any venue, with any circumstances around it. And that's something that they can hang their hat on. So, yeah, teams are going to have off days. Free throw shooting, three-point shooting, that's going to come and go from time to time. That defense doesn't come and go. That defense is good every game.
Big C saying, will you come around on the Roughnecks? The 2-0 Houston Roughnecks.
I watched them last night.
I'm a huge Roughneck fan. Peyton Pardee's on that staff. I love Peyton Pardee. I love him very, very much. So I'm rooting for the Roughnecks. I want them to do very well. Peyton Pardee, go Cougs. They're coached by Wade Phillips. I want Wade Phillips to do well. Go Cougs. They play at TDECU Stadium. The more games played there, the more revenue for Houston. Go Cougs. So I wish good things for the Houston Roughnecks. I can't imagine a scenario where I watch a second of XFL football.
Oh, I did. I've watched both their games, and I enjoyed watching that game in the second half when it got interesting. I also enjoyed the fact that whether they planned on this or not, they have to be careful who they mic and when they go to it, because they went to the Roughnecks quarterback after things didn't exactly go his way, and he dropped a couple of F-bombs right there and kind of called out his offensive coordinator on a play call. So I kind of like that aspect.
Who was
of
dropping
it.
The F-bombs?
The quarterback of the Roughnecks.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant Wade for a second. I was like, no, not my
Wade.
I'm
not big on going so like all access that they go into the locker room at halftime for part of the speech, too. I don't need all of that, but I do like what they're trying to do.
There was another one, too, in one of the other games where the quarterback's calling the play and one of his offensive linemen keeps jumping in to try to change the play, and he just tells him to shut the bleep up.
Love it.
Like, it's awesome.
713-780-3776. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 4488, does Wisconsin forward Tyler Wall, does his game translate to the NBA?
It could. Don't bring that up. Don't bring that up. No, I'm pissed off about what happened yesterday. I mean, look, for a Wisconsin fan, I had everything I needed yesterday. I had the Bucks on national TV. I had the Badgers on national TV. And the Badgers don't figure out up three with 2.1 seconds how to foul and just end the game. And then they overplay on the inbound, and they get a Hail Mary three to tie it and win it in overtime against the hated Michigan Wolverines. It really ticked me off. They got a couple players on that Wisconsin team that as role players in the NBA could fit on the next level. But overall, it's a disappointing season for them. So it's kind of, I got a bad taste.
I don't think that Wall's game translates to the NBA. I think he's a bit undersized to play the four, like
the
a little skinny, not a great rebounder.
With the ears.
I'm not familiar with his game.
Starts with an E. He's going to play on the next level.
Oh, Sigian or whatever? I don't think he was.
Or something. He reminds me a little bit of Tyler Hero.
Yeah, I didn't see him last year. I don't think he was on the team last year.
No, he wasn't on the team last year.
Wall, I saw personally. I don't think he's big enough to play the four in the NBA. I don't think he's athletic or a good enough shooter to play the three in the NBA. I don't think his game translates to the next level. 713-780-ESPN, your question for the Killer Bees. 0170, any thoughts on this year's F1 championship based on preseason testing last week?
I have thoughts.
No.
Here's my
Michael
stance
Schumacher
on F1.
To come back and take it all.
Doesn't his son race? I think he's an alternate now for one of the top teams. Here's how my stance on F1. I like it way more than I used to. I like the documentary on Netflix. The show on Netflix. Yeah. He's pretty young, but yeah, he's racing. And then I don't really watch the races, though. Give me the documentary. Give me the show on Netflix. I don't really care that much about the race. The show's better than the race. Is the show good for F1? Yeah, it's brought fans and, you know, viewers to their product and all of that. But I just care more about the show than the actual races. Which, by the way, I did watch, Total Swing or whatever?
The PGA.
The one on PGA.
Netflix, yeah.
I saw the first four episodes. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. I enjoyed it. I watched the tennis one, too. The tennis one's really
good.
Some
of my golf buddies are hammering it because it's like when you have the golf guys there, it seems like they've all been fed with a silver spoon and they got the trophy wife and they got millions of dollars. And so it's harder to get into it. That was the negative feedback I heard on the PGA one.
I mean, they show them flying private and all of that. But I enjoyed it. 713-780-3776.
It ain't no million-dollar listening LA, Jeremy.
Okay. Best reality show is The Challenge. That's the best reality show by far. It's so good. Which, by the way, thanks to Brian McTaggart, his coverage on Astros.com, J.P. France, wouldn't call France a prospect, but minor leaguer on the 40-man roster. Maybe we'll see him on the Astros this year. He's married to a former contestant on The Challenge. And the real world. I learned that today. Thank you, Brian McTaggart. 1296. What's the best cut for a steak?
I've gone back and forth. I used to do ribeye. I love a filet. So I think now the best bet for me is always just go filet.
This to me, I was talking to Q about this the other day. Actually, is that it? A lot of times it depends on the place. It depends on where you're going. Like, whenever we go to Vegas, I like to go to Cleaver's. And Cleaver's, I think, has an unbelievable ribeye. I'll be going to Cleaver's if I make it out to Vegas anytime soon, and I'll have the ribeye. Can't go wrong with a porterhouse. Now, if you go to Taste of Texas, their fillets are unbelievable. Last time we went out there, celebrating my younger brother's birthday, my wife got the fillet. I got the ribeye. She out-waterburgered me. So this depends a lot of times on where you're going and, yep, like, how it's cooked. Are you cooking it on the grill? Do you have the sous vide? Like, a lot of it comes into play. I'll order a ribeye more than anything else, but certain places, they specialize in certain cuts. If you're going to Taste of Texas, go with the fillet. The fillet's unbelievable there.
Well, I used to be a ribeye guy, and then I kind of went back to the fillet. And you're right. I mean, if you get the right cut on a fillet, it's hard to screw it up.
Here's our last one, 4920, Ryan. Will Dana Brown extend Astros for life, quote-unquote, Bregman or Altuve before he extends Kyle Tucker?
Both. He's going to try to do both before he extends Kyle Tucker, I think.
I agree with you on Altuve.
Altuve for sure will do it. I think, like we talked about, Bregman's going to price himself out.
I don't think Bregman or Tucker will sign a contract extension with the Astros.
Of the two, the chances are greater for Bregman than Tucker.
I would agree with that because I think Bregman would be more affordable.
And affordable and loyalties, I think, run a little deeper. Tucker not that he was as overly outwardly emotional as others in terms of the arbitration process, but I think that he understands it's a business, and if he wants to get that big payday, he's probably going to look elsewhere.
All right, that's our Mailbag Monday. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want every Monday at 2 o'clock. Here's one thing from over the weekend that we need to talk about. The pitch clock. How do you feel about it now that you've seen it a little bit in spring training? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Could have rung them up easily. Uh-oh.
And now what?
He's out.
They have called strike three! Wow! That was the ending to the Boston Red Sox game, right? The spring training game where they got called out for the hitter violation, not getting into the box. So if he misses, if the clock expires, it's a strike to the batter. He already had two strikes, strike to the batter, third strike, final out of the game. See you later. We'll play again tomorrow.
It is awkward, though, that it gets under 8 seconds and you have to be set in the box. And then isn't that kind of like a...
You have to be set in the box, I believe, is the rule. See, there's a clock for the hitter to be in the box, right, to be ready to go. And then there's the clock for the pitcher to be on the rubber, ready to go, and deliver the pitch. You have to deliver the pitch within the framework of the time as well. We've seen some incredibly short games. The Astros game yesterday went 2 hours and 6 minutes. The games have been going about 2.5 hours. We told you this before spring training started. They did this last year in the minors. And games that used the clock shaved 25 minutes off the game. It went from 3 hours and 5 minutes or so to about like just over 2:35. It was 25 to 30 minutes that was shaved off the game with the new clocks that have been added, the pitch clock and the hitter clock as well. How do you feel about it now that we've seen it a couple of, a few games now in spring training?
It's interesting. It's easy to pick apart because when you look at it from a big picture perspective, they're basically having two calls a game right now, and that's probably going to go down as teams adjust, both pitchers and hitters. But I think that it's also because you're using kind of like the discretion of an umpire, what set is like, you know, guys do different things. As long as they're in the box and they look like they're ready to hit, whether they're set or not, they got 8 seconds and they're playing off the pitcher's first movement. It's not like they got 1 foot out of the box and the bat tucked under their cup and they're doing both batting gloves and doing all these things. I understand. I hate messing with the integrity of the game. More so than the pitch clock and the hitter's clock. The thing that bothers me the most is I think you're really screwing with the game when you tell a pitcher how many times he can go over to first base. And that if you're as a base runner, you know that he's out of times to go over, that it makes a hell of a lot easier to steal a base. And that messes with the game itself. That's what bothers me more than these clocks.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the two disengagement rule. As far as the clocks, I absolutely love it. I'm in favor of this. I know people have seen like a couple of highlights. They saw the Red Sox game end with a batter violation that led to the final strike, that led to the final out, game over, and they overreact to the one, you know, two, three, you know, Twitter videos that they see that are out there. I love this for a variety of reasons. One, baseball brought this onto itself. Baseball brought this onto itself with the hitters that are adjusting the gloves, mm-hmm. putting the bat back on, restrapping their elbow pad, and taking a minute to get into the box. They have no one to blame but themselves. Pitchers brought it onto themselves. You're walking to the back of the mound. Lance McCullers taking his cap off, putting the cap on, playing with your hair, doing all of this thing. They brought it on to themselves. All this is doing is that it's creating a higher ratio of action versus just waiting around watching nothing. I love baseball. I'm kind of this hybrid baseball purist versus I'm cool with some of the new rules that are being implemented. I've seen this in college baseball the last couple of years. Like, they're going to get used to this, and it's not going to be a problem.
And the thing is like Max Scherzer loves it because it gives the kind of the control factor back to the pitcher. Like, if he's rolling and he's on the bump and he's ready to go pitch after pitch, you got to be set. You got to be in the box. You got to be ready to go. And you can't do the kind of things like when we always say, look, managers forever and a day would say, hey, he's only thrown 3 pitches this inning. He's got 2 outs. Go take some pitches. Go step out. Go make sure that he has some time still out there. Let our defense rest a little bit. Now you can't do that. And so I get it that the pitcher can get some command back in terms of the one-on-one at bat with the hitter. But it's also the fact that the game yesterday was 2 hours and 6 minutes. Like, that's flying by, and I get it. You're trying to appease the family with kids and if they're going to go to the game, or the viewer that, you know, is trying to stay and stick through a full baseball game. But it just worries me how much tinkering you're doing with the game. But like I said, I think in terms of, like, a hitter should be ready. It's annoying to even I think it was Barstool did the thing where how many times can Jose Altuve run around the bases in an inside-the-park home run that they had on tape before –
It was Pedro Baez.
It was Baez.
David Ross
in the World Series.
Or in like the NLCS. Or
in the NLCS, yeah. And it was just like, it was like three, wasn't it?
Seven.
Oh, wow.
He did 7 inside the park home runs in between 2 pitches.
Yeah. This is a good thing for baseball. And I've seen a lot of people, oh, no, like, this is bad. There's going to be less time.
People are crapping all over it.
You're not going to notice this by June. Like, by June, when everybody's accustomed to it, you're going to see, like, you're going to see it happen once or twice over the entire season. And you're going to have games that instead of dragging on to the wee hours of the night, they're going to take 2.5 hours, which is better. It's a better product. It's easier to sell. It's easier to attract more fans. And then you're also just increasing the level of action versus the level of staying around.
Well, let me ask you
a
question.
I don't need to see dudes walking around the mound or staying out of the box for, you know, a minute and a half.
But just like the runner on second base was great for the regular season, sped things up.
No, I disagree. I hated that in the regular season.
Okay, but a lot of people loved it because it sped the game up because of the chances of going like 15, 16, 17, 18 innings goes away. And I know they also did it from saving bullpen arms and all those other things as well. But they also abolished it for the playoffs. Do you want the same time rules in the playoffs?
Yeah, they need to be accustomed to it. Yeah, absolutely. Now, maybe I don't think an umpire should be as strict calling a final strike to a hitter. Like, I think there needs to be a little bit of leeway there. But the umpires are calling this in spring training so the players get accustomed to it. Yes, there needs to be a pitch clock if you have a pitch clock the entire regular season. Yes, there needs to be a clock for the batter to get into the box if you have it the entire regular season. Would you not have a shot clock in NBA in the postseason?
I understand within reason, but when you're talking about high intense, it's one thing to say against the A's on a Tuesday night when everybody, you know, when you just want to get through it, I get it. That's exactly why it's in place. But when you're talking about a deciding game of the World Series or a big play in the playoffs, I think that's where discretion has to get into play with an umpire. Like, I'm not going to hammer it right at 8 seconds. We've seen this a lot in the playoffs in the NBA when referees, not that they turn their cheek completely, but they're not going to enforce an 8 second violation in the backcourt in key moments. They're not.
I mean, that one's kind of binary if you have the shot clock.
I'm just looking for the best comparison. In
probably like a 5 second violation, I think, is a better comp.
Or 3 seconds in the lane.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to be a lot more lenient when it's a big pressure moment in a bigger game with a lot of impact, as opposed to, you know, like I said, a weeknight game against a subpar opponent.
No, yeah. I think there needs to be a little bit of leeway there. But, like, people are acting like this is the worst thing that's ever happened in baseball when baseball games used to be 2.5 hours. And then all these sabermetric nerds came in here. Oh, we don't want a guy to go through the lineup a third time. Oh, we need to make all these changes with the lefty, the righty game. Like, they're trying to get back to the game being 2.5 hours,
that's
which
joke.
It used to be. And on top of that, too, like, I mean, Blankers, you were probably around when the invent of the shot clock in the NBA. Like, it was the same thing. Like, the NBA adding the shot clock.
I don't remember the shot clock. I remember
I was kidding. But
I know. The three-point line was another
radical
one where it was a massive adjustment.
Very radical. Yeah. But, like, the NBA adding the shot clock is very similar to Major League Baseball adding the pitch clock or a dude getting into the batter's box. Like, it's really weird whenever it happens. But in the long run, it's going to be better for the game. No one even bats an eye about the shot clock now. In fact, in college basketball, it's been reduced further and further down. Like, shorter games are better games, and King of Twitch is saying, well, now there's going to be less ads.
That's
no, there's not.
That's not
the commercial length is going to be the same amount of time. The ads are going to be the exact same.
Joe wants a manager to wear khakis. I'm pretty sure he's probably, you know, going to be behind this too.
It's not that I'm fine with it. And honestly, I think the biggest disconnect is that it's not for anyone watching the game on a Tuesday night. This is for the postseason. This is to catch casuals. This is to make your sport more entertaining, because that's what they need. Like, no one that watches the Astros play for the first time in the World Series that's not a typical baseball fan is sticking around because they're 3.5 hour, 4 hour games
but
in the playoffs.
I disagree. It's not for the regular season weekday games, because they consistently hear from
it's
fans
that
say,
yeah,
I can't take my kids on a school night and I got to have them in bed by a certain time, and these damn games go 3 hours plus. We can't stick it out. So we feel like we're wasting money by leaving in the fifth inning.
And I get that. And I think the only ad revenue it can affect is if these games are that much, you know, faster pace, you are going to lose probably like 30 to 45 minutes of beer sales because of the seventh inning at home games. Also, I talked about it, and Paul was giving me a hard time, like, if it matters, but, like, when do you go get beer? Like, if these lines are so long, like, I guess you could see – like an in-stadium revenue drop.
Have you ever seen a beer vendor walk around the stadium with a big cooler of beer
that
you can buy it from?
I can't explain it to you, but, like, I don't see them at Minute Maid. I guess it's just the way I grew up at Wrigley, where, like, they're everywhere. But I feel like you literally do not see them at Minute
Maid. You see them all the time at Minute Maid. I see them all the time.
I just feel like it's
way
less
frequent. They all got the Astros, the old rainbow jerseys with their three-digit number and name on the back and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think
I see them all the time.
You need more of that because, they have those self-serving kiosks that you just walk through. Like, even, like, those lines are crazy long all the time.
Isn't it like U of H games where you can have it delivered to your seats, too?
You can. Yeah, there's
some
apps.
Certain sections that have that now. But, like, you might lose some, mostly the seventh inning. I guess you'll lose revenue, but that's it, really.
The ones that bother me the most are, like I said, that you only can make the two moves to first base, and then the size of the bases, because I think
that, actually.
I think it's screwing with the integrity of the game. The bases have always been the same size. A pitcher can always keep a base stealer close by making moves. I don't think that you should change that. I get you can, because I think you can make significant strides by doing what you're doing with the clock for the pitch clock and the hitter.
713-780-ESPN. Why do you not like the pitch clock? 713-780-3776. We'll get into some Kyle Tucker and what he had to say about the new rules. And also, Dana Brown has his eye. He fancies a certain Astro pitcher. Could this be a wild card addition to the Astros' starting rotation? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Be like me and take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by SiteJab.com, benefiting Kids Mills. This year's tournament will take place Wednesday, March 8th, 10:30 a.m. at Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer will receive beverages from Carbach Brewing Company, lunch from Mendocino Farms, dinner, 18 holes of golf, and a limited edition ESPN t-shirt. You don't want to miss that. Register now at ESPN975.com. Discussing the pitch clock and the new hitter clock in baseball, I'm a huge fan of it. I like games being shorter. I saw it the last few years in college baseball. I thought I didn't notice it. Like, I saw two or three times where it was called, which, whatever. Like, I will take two or three times when it's called where a strike is added to the hitter or a ball is added to the pitcher for 30 minutes being shaved off the game, for making it a much more action-packed game as opposed to, you know, Nomar Garciaparra readjusting his batting gloves and his elbow pad,
Altuve,
his helmet.
Does it a lot.
Altuve does it. Lance McCullers walks around all the time. Some people said Luis Garcia, the rock the baby. That's a little bit different in terms of time. That's because you have to have one, like, clear start to the windup. I'm a huge fan of this. I love it. I really don't see a whole lot of criticism for it. Some people, well, you know, I'm not going to have time to go buy my beer. Okay, well, plan accordingly. Some people talking about the ad revenue. The commercial breaks are going to be the same. Now, if you're talking about in-game revenue, TV stations and radio stations and you know, broadcasting all these people, they'll always find a way to be creative and a way to sell their product. So that's not going to go away.
Look at how many times between mound visits and other times where there's any stoppage in play that all the broadcasts now go split screen, so that even golf, where they stick with the action on the course while half the screen shows you a quick commercial ad from a sponsor. They're going to get all their paid sponsor mentions in, and they're going to run commercials during, like I said, mound visits or a replay, so that they still get their revenues no matter what. And the breaks never change. For someone that used to format every game for multiple sports, I can tell you that the one thing is that the league's going to say that, by the way, they're going to get more revenue in the playoffs because the breaks are longer in the playoffs. They are extended breaks to appease national TV so that they can get all the maximize all the revenue they can get, and therefore those don't change.
No, that's they're going to figure out a way to continue their ad revenue. Now times that you have to go to the bathroom at a game, like if you're going physically to the game, going to the bathroom, getting a beer, now it's going to cut down into your viewing pleasure. It really is, because I mean, if it takes you 5 minutes, that might be selling it short. If it takes you 10 minutes to go to the bathroom, grab a beer, come back into your seat, 10 minutes, 3 hour game, 10 minutes, 2.5 hour game. You are missing a bigger chunk, which is something that you have to decide as the viewer. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, 5535. I don't really care either way, but I would always rather see the pitcher and hitter both completely locked in. I enjoy the cat and mouse games they play with each other, especially stepping out of the box against Joe Kelly and ticking his little off.
Ooh, hello.
Yeah, he got pretty heated. He worked his
I like
way up.
It.
I think that you're still going to see some cat and mouse played. They're just going to have to try to figure out a way to be creative. And I'm pretty sure you can still step out of the box.
I'm pretty good with Juan Soto not being able to do all the antics that he does in the batter's box.
He'll still do that
time,
because he does it right after the pitch.
But he can't do it as long. So, I mean, I can deal with it a little bit more. It's just, I mean, I'd like to slow down some of that crap with the showboating. But, you know, if it's legit, you know, in a very intense situation between hitter and pitcher, and you want to reset, I've always been okay with it, but I understand, I'm open-minded to the fact that there are a lot of different reasons why people get turned off of the game of baseball, and I don't want them to turn off baseball. So if there's ways that the league is trying to be proactive to try and nip this, I'm fine with it.
I want more showboating in baseball, to be completely honest with you. I want more bat flips and celebrations.
Bat flips are fine, but I'm talking about the fact that between pitches, when you took it to the level that Soto has taken it to from time to time, you know what? There's a reason why guys get hit in their back pocket a lot,
too. I'm okay with that, too.
Well, baseball's not. look, they don't look. You have to. How many times do we, when someone is hit, do you have to say, "Oh, it slipped out of my hand," and you can't just flat out come out and say, "Yeah, I drilled him because he was being a D-bag in the batter's box."
I mean, there's certain things that you're not going to say, but in Major League Baseball is not going to condone it, and they are going to probably have a quick trigger ejecting.
Like I said, baseball's against that.
But they're not going to prevent it. Like they're going to.
There's a difference. I didn't say they were going to prevent it, but they're not fans of that. But that's why guys have to.
That's fine. Like Major League Baseball, like I don't care what they're fans of. Like I like when people celebrate a home run. I like the bat flip, and I'm totally between a fastball being between the numbers of that guy next time he comes up too.
But you care what they think because they think that the games were going too long, and so they put these in, and you like the change.
But I also hate some of the other things. Like just because Major League Baseball is implementing some things that I like doesn't mean that I like them all.
No, that's also a different discussion. I'm just saying, like. Baseball is going to sit there and going to do certain things you like, certain things you don't like, but I don't like messing with the integrity of the game. That's why I said the things that I don't like. But I don't, you know, again, it's old school in terms of what's showboating versus what's gamesmanship. I think that when it comes to the pitcher stepping off and the batters in the batter's box.
Here was Kyle Tucker discussing some of the new rules that Major League Baseball is putting into place in 2023.
I mean, it's a little weird. I mean, it's first actual live at bat and in a game in a couple months, so it's a little like uncomfortable being in the box at first, but you get used to it.
Did you get enough dirt on your hands?
No, I can't do anything anymore. You do feel a little rush in there, and it kind of takes away some of the thought process and strategy that goes into an at bat and stuff like that. So you feel a little rushed up there, but so I don't know how it's gonna go.
There you go. Kyle Tucker feels a little bit rushed. I think he'll become accustomed to it. Like anything, anytime you do something with a time constraint for the first time, it feels different. But once you have, like, I mean, these dudes are going to have 600 plate appearances over the course of 2023, the regulars. I bet you by the time that Kyle Tucker's stepping into the box for the 20th time, he's going to be completely accustomed and understanding of the time constraints and is not going to affect him whatsoever.
A change is never received well. I think that, you know, we said this from the start of the discussion. I firmly believe that by the time we get to the regular season, everybody's going to know and understand and adjust and be fine with what they have to do. I saw some people saying, oh, baseball's going to step in. There's been so many people with outrage about this. They'll change it by midseason. No, they won't. They're expecting the players to change. To adapt to the situation and understand these are the rules, just like you play with every other rule. Get over it and deal with it.
Yeah.
The biggest change for like the players is going to be just the scouting report of like what you're going to do. Because if you look at that first spring training game was the Padres, Nick Martinez was taking 5 seconds. His clock was starting. He was throwing it by 10 seconds left. So like that, I think, is the biggest adjustment. Is some of these pitchers have taken it so extreme that they're just going right away, so there's not even a chance. So I think you're just going to have to like figure out like how long each guy is going to do it, because some guys will take the whole 15 or 20 seconds when they get it. It seems like some of them are not going to.
Well, but I think a lot of it has to do with the old pitcher's mentality, which is when you're rolling, just give it to me so I can throw it again. And you see a lot of guys, even before the implement of the clock, that's the way pitchers pitch. If they had their good stuff and they were mowing guys down, let me rock and fire. Give it to me again. I'm going to keep going. And the hitter wants to slow you down to kind of get you out of that groove that you're in. So I think that, you know, vice versa, if the pitcher is struggling a little bit, I think he's going to use most of the clock. He's going to still milk it.
This is the perfect example, though, of, like, people just not liking change, and, like, one-fifth of the world is just going to just naturally be unhappy with something. Because what has been the biggest criticism of Major League Baseball, kind of universally from sports fans?
The game takes too long.
It drags too long. There's not enough action. There's not enough going on. And then all of a sudden, you make the change to eliminate some of those concerns. Oh, I hate this. Everything feels rushed. This isn't baseball. What are we doing to the game? Like, it's just, no, you're never going to please everybody. I'm a fan of 2.5-hour games, not 3-hour games. I'm a fan of more action from first pitch to last pitch than I am a whole lot of waiting around. This is going to be overall good for the game. People are going to get adjusted to it, just like basketball got adjusted to the shot clock, and everything is going to be just fine. Like, could you imagine how radical that was when basketball all of a sudden, yeah, there's no shot clock. You don't have to get a shot up in a certain period of time. But in a way to elevate the product of the game, now we're going to add the shot clock, and you have to get a shot off or it's going to be a turnover in X amount of time. All of a sudden, you put that into play. We're way past 20 years later now, but here we are in 2023. No one thinks twice about the shot clock. It's going to be the same thing with the pitch clock and this hitter's clock, and I bet you it's not even going to take you that long. Whenever June rolls around, July rolls around, you're going to forget this was even a thing.
Well, I agree with that. Like I said, I think that the hitters are going to – they might not like it. It might take a little bit for them to change things up a little bit, like Luis Garcia has to do with his delivery. I think that guys don't really receive change well, especially when they're professional athletes. But I think that especially if they find some success with it early on, they're not going to bitch as much. And if the adjustments aren't that severe and the timing they don't feel after a while is that bad, they'll be fine with it too. Everybody just adjusts and moves on. And at a certain point, we won't be talking about it anymore. But because of the way these first couple examples came into play, especially in a tight game in the last inning, there was so much room for fodder for people to kill it early on and be hypercritical of it.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get into that pitcher that Dana Brown loves. And if the Astros use a six-man rotation, could this be the dark horse for that sixth spot in the Astros rotation? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Some of the Twitchers are taking a contrarian opinion, which never happened. It never happens before. I'm surprised they're doing this. We'll get into those contrarian opinions in just a moment. But tis the season. It's that time again. March right around the corner this week, Wednesday. It's March, baby. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5's fifth annual Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, supported by Rudy's Barbecue. We'll be giving away tons of prizes worth over $50 each. And did we mention it's all free? Prizes included gift cards to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage, Chewy's, The Burger Joint, and much more. Head to ESPN975.com to register now. You can sign up early, even though the brackets aren't out. It's Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, America's favorite light lager. All right, so who said this? Flimsy said this. The shot clock in basketball wasn't intended to make games shorter. The games were always going to be the same length. It's an apples-to-orange comparison. Here's where it's an apples to apples comparison, and what I responded in Twitch too. The basketball put in the shot clock to make it a more entertaining game. Mm-hmm. Baseball is adding the pitch clock to make it a more entertaining game. The entertainment is what they're trying to sell. Is baseball a timed game? No, it's always been a timeless game, quite honestly. Whereas basketball had, you start, play 40 minutes if it's college, 48 minutes if it's in the NBA. Baseball has the 27 outs. But the goal of both rules was with the spirit of making it a more entertaining, watchable product that ultimately will lead to more viewers and more fans into the game.
Every sport does it. The same reason why receivers are not going to be as able to be chucked and have the hands on them, and the way they change it to make it more pass-happy NFL is because of the fact that it was more entertaining, more points scored, more exciting for fans. The same way hockey doesn't end in a tie anymore because they want shootouts and they want a winner and a loser, and the shootout itself becomes a very exciting ending to a game is the reason why, because hockey paid attention. They want a more entertaining sport. I mean, even from a soccer perspective, the fact that you want games to end in a shootout instead of a tie, those are the kind of things that all leagues are concerned with on a daily basis. They don't want it to be more about the mascot races that people on TV don't get to see. They want it so that they stay engaged for a majority of the game or more of the game, and the games don't take as long, so they don't have to say, well, I couldn't stay up anymore to see the ending.
Walker says, what about the bigger bases? Was that for entertainment too? Yes. Baseball's trying to get away from they're trying to get away from just like the three true results. Strikeout, walk, home run. That's why they eliminated the shift. That way you can see some more hits, maybe some more extra bases. They want to add the running element back to the game because they think it's an action-packed play, the stolen base. So they are trying to heighten stolen base attempts, and that has been proven to be true when you look at the minor leagues that were using these rules last year.
Not to mention player safety as well, as it factors into
the plays at second base and the ability to stay out of harm's way and still get the base, because it's the old adage of what we were talking about earlier about what umpires under their discretion allow. A slide by the bag used to be allowed, even though by the letter of the law, the rule is you have to touch the bag. Well, when touching the bag, there was also a pretty good chance you were going to get touched up by a guy coming in high or hard at the base and take you out. Well, you know, even at first base, we saw a lot of collisions and a lot of plays where feet get stepped on and guys miss time. That also factored in.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Art, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Art?
Hey, guys. I think it's going to be a good change, but it's just all about implementation. Obviously, like the most exciting play is, you know, bases loaded, you know, full count, bottom of the ninth. And then, you know, what happened the other day during that spring training game is something that they cannot have during the regular season. So I don't know if you, like, take that off during the playoffs or something, because there is some drama in the playoffs, right, when you're the pitcher staring down and they, you know, shaking heads with the catcher and just going back and forth. You know, who's going to win the head game between the pitcher and the batter? Mm-hmm. And that might go away now because there's some clock. So that's only negative.
Appreciate it, Art. It's not going to go away. It's just going to expedite the process. Well, it's going to be faster.
But they already expedited that process of picking the right pitch with the little remotes.
PitchCom. You can shake off PitchCom, but you're right. They did that in an element to speed up the process, too. So that element is not gone. It's just an expedited process that's going to take a quicker
time. Wait till they update the sign stealing so that they can do it all with technology and they can utilize everything so they don't need trash cans.
713-780-ESPN. Dana Brown got one look of Ronel Blanco. Did Dana Brown, do you have the Dana Brown saying this, Joe George? Astros general manager Dana Brown, which I actually saw this inning because they posted in Astros.com, because they're actually interviewing Dusty Baker during Ronel Blanco's one inning, and Blanco struck out the side, looked very, very good, which, you know, had a really good winter ball. That's exciting. Maybe he can make this team or at least be somebody who eats innings on this team at some point. Dana Brown, Astros GM, on what he saw from Blanco and what he likes.
Kind of fired me up over there. I was like, hey, why can't this guy start? You know, I got my scouting hat on already. I'm like, man, this guy's a reliever? Let's stretch him out a little bit. At the end of the day, you always love to have some depth with your starters, and I think our bullpen is really good right now. So, and, you know, that's where we have depth. So if we can convert one of these bullpen guys into a starter, I'm not against that. I'll tell you that.
Dana Brown kind of throwing out there the possibility of turning one of these bullpen arms to a starter, because right now the Astros have a surplus of relievers. Mm-hmm. Last year they had a surplus of starters. Now with the Lance McCullers injury, you have five big league starters that you're comfortable with, but the Astros might toy with the idea of a six-man rotation, keep everybody fresh, keep the bullpen intact, keep them fresh as well. I've had some people suggest Brian Abreu potentially as a starter. What do you make of the idea of Ronel Blanco and Brian Abreu potentially being converted to being a starter for the Houston Astros?
I think you got to see what you got and if they're going to be capable of doing what they did a year ago. It looks great on paper, but until you see how it translates to the field at the start of another new season when we start from scratch and 0-0 in the win-loss column, I think that you have to see, and like we talked about, will Montero and Ryan Stanek and those guys kind of come back a little bit? Will Abreu be able to maintain what he did in the playoffs? But I think that the overall concern that I have, which is why I think it's twofold. I think just like you protected Verlander a year ago from himself and from injury, I think you're going to do the same thing now with Lance McCullers because of the way the season's already starting. Because of the fact that it's so hyper important that when the games mean the most, you have a guy like that you can plug and play and know he's going to give you a quality start. But that means that whoever you're looking at number six has to be good enough to kind of bridge the gap until you get there and get to the point where you're going to start pinning back it into a five-man rotation. And I don't really necessarily know who that answer is. We know who the five guys are, but in terms of that sixth, obviously with the first performance of the season, I'm not going to put all that much into it, but for a lot of those people that were holding their breath and hoping that the big bonus baby that pitched today,
Forrest
Whitley, was going to be that guy because they saw the internet. Well, you know what? He hasn't pitched in the major leagues the way, and he's not that guy yet. So you have to look at other options. If it's not Brandon Belak, who I don't want it to be, then who is it possibly capable? Who is it being? The one thing I do think is refreshing, because it's the exact opposite of James Click, is I love the fact that Dana Brown might actually have to tone it down a little bit, because he's so transparent and so, you know, open to sharing his feelings, which we love.
Yeah.
You got to see how that's going to also work for the long haul.
It's great for us in the media. Yeah. It's great for tags. It's great for us talking about it because it gives us content, quite frankly. Can it get Dana Brown and the Astros in trouble?
From players' perspective, agent's perspective.
Yeah, certain things. I don't think he's crossed the line yet.
No, not yet.
I don't really think he's come close to crossing the line. Some people are like, well, why are you being so open with contract extensions? I think it's transparency with the fan base, and I think it puts the onus on the player, which I'm a fan of. As far as converting these relievers to starters, quite frankly, I'm not a huge fan of it. Because both of these guys once started games in the minors. Ronel Blanco, the last time he started a game was in 2019. He started 21 games in the minor leagues. Why is he no longer a starter? Probably because he didn't have the makeup, to be a starting pitcher in the big leagues. I understand he's a different guy now than he was in 2019, but there's probably a reason why they pigeonholed him as a reliever. It's okay, this guy's makeup, this guy's stuff, he doesn't really have the ability to be somebody that can go 2-3 times through the lineup. How can he go one inning? Can he get 3 outs? Oh, yeah, we can make sure that, you know, the fastball velo is up a couple of miles per hour. The, you know, aggressiveness, throwing your breaking stuff where he just lets it all out, is something that suits him more than it suits other pitchers. Sure. Same thing with Brian Abreu. Like, Brian Abreu has found a spot where most of his career outside of the minor leagues was like, it was a struggle. There was some concerns about if this guy could take his game to the another level. I remember Patrick Creighton early last year saying, this guy doesn't belong on the 26-man roster. He should be in Sugarland as a space cowboy, and then had a sub-2 ERA. So there are certain pitchers that have the makeup to be starters. Most every pitcher that goes into the minor leagues, they try to use them as starters at the very beginning, because starters have more value than relievers. And then once they figure out that this guy doesn't have the makeup, he doesn't have the arsenal to make it as a starter, they convert them to relievers. And now you have a really good thing with Brian Abreu. I don't want to mess with a really good thing. And it looks like Ronel Blanco is going to be a really good thing. I don't want to mess with that good thing.
Well, but I also think a lot of it has to do with rosters, right? I think on your roster, Abreu's got a spot. He's got a position in this bullpen. He's got a set role to play that everybody loves that could get better. From a Blanco, if he wasn't going to be on the 40 man, if he wasn't going to make this team otherwise, but all of a sudden, because they got a wild hair and because of the injury to McCullers, they want to see if they can stretch him out and use him, and that means he makes the big league roster or has a role on this team, you can experiment with that. I don't want him experimenting with Brian Abreu, because what he showed us in the playoffs looks like, you know, the best is yet to come in the exact role that he was in.
Yeah, I'd rather them experiment with Blanco, too. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to Joe George for doing all the hard work. He's Blank on Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5. Wiffle ball. And ESPN 92.5.